please take your seats. The show is about to begin.
Welcome to Pod of No Return, an in-depth, sometimes humorous, behind-the-scenes tour of real life and a Broadway show with your hosts, Greg Mills and Jeremy Stoll.
Welcome to Pod of No Return with your hosts, Greg Mills, Jeremy Stoll, and our producer, Joyce Belitsky. This week, we're going to talk about movie musicals. We're going to talk about musicals that turn to movies, movies that turn to musicals, movies that turn to musicals and back, musicals that turn to movies and back to musicals and then back to movies to be musicals and then become a movie. And all the ridiculous...
And TV series.
Exactly. And TV series, exactly. All the ridiculous things that have happened and all the magical things that have accidentally happened and everything. To join us this week, we have invited Carl from Phantom of the Opera, Mr. Carlton Moe. Welcome, Carl.
How's it going, you guys?
What are you up to?
Well, when we closed, like a few days later, the wife and I, we went on this trip. We went to London. We saw some shows. She ran the London Marathon and finished, and that was wild. And then we went to Porto, Portugal after that, because I actually have a couple friends who live out there. And so we stayed with them in their beautiful home. And just, I don't know, I'd never been to Porto or just Portugal as a country before.
Yeah, was it amazing?
It's a beautiful place, you know? It was really, they have this awesome building there called Casa da Musica. Hmm. And it's like their big performance venue there. But it's rather new still. Like it was made this century, unlike so many Broadway theaters. And so it had this really awesome, it was like a gorgeous and like very like well-equipped performance venue, like concert hall, but at the same time had very like modern architecture too.
Did you see a performance there?
Yeah, I actually saw my friend Thiago is like, you know, my friends there, they're singers. And so he was in this choir concert there of like all German music. And it was pretty great. I mean, it's like a nice, they have all these like acoustic modifying things with the space, like curtains and stuff that they can bring in and out to just like make it work for any kind of, you know, whether it's an orchestra or like a soloist.
That's
or whatever,
cool.
It can work.
And did you see any shows when you were in London?
We saw Back to the Future, the musical.
Nice. Great, Scott!
Which is great for our topic today.
Yeah, really?
We saw Les Mis. That was my second time seeing it on the West End.
Wow.
We saw this thing. I thought about going to see Phantom, but I was like, it's too soon. It's only been like a few days. I was like, I can't. And and we saw this thing called The Choir of Man.
Yes!
It's like...
You've heard of it?
Yeah, you've heard of this, Jeremy?
Yeah, I've heard of it because actually my agent is one of their tour managers. She loves it. They came to the U.S. and they toured the entire U.S. It's a very cool concept.
Yeah, it's totally this like love letter to pubs, essentially, and like the pub culture, I guess. And it's all these like guys singing these like essentially like pop rock, classic rock kind of like tunes, but in their own arrangements. And it's not really a story so much as an explanation of people's like characters, really. I don't know how to describe it, but the thing is like the stage is actually like a bar. It's actually a pub.
Oh, that's cool.
It's a bar. And they pour drinks.
It serves actual beer.
Yeah, like they pour beers out and like hand them to audience members, and they'll have them come up for certain numbers. We were like up in the sort of like the mezzanine area, this little theater they were in. And so we were like, oh, we don't. But there is a part where they throw out crisps, as they call them. We call them chips here.
Yeah, yeah.
Crisps. They just chuck them at people. And we're like, oh, we can't get any from up here. That's lame. But they get these like slingshots.
I was going to say, do they have a crisp cannon or something that they blast them up?
Yeah.
I can actually tell you how this show came about. It's there's a whole genre of entertainment that is concerts that venues around the country hire in shows. And I know this because I have my own. I have several concerts that I've produced and written, like the Broadway Band and Unreachable Stars and No More Talk of Darkness. I've got the Phantom's Favorite Divas, these different shows that go around, and they're for concert entertainment. But these guys came up with this idea where they wanted to do a concert, and their idea was that they're doing pop music, but they're doing it in kind of 12-part men's pop style. So they set it in a pub, because there's where else do you tell all of your stories than drinking beers in the pub? They set it in the pub so that they were allowed to sing the songs with a piano in the pub, and then also they have the option of telling stories, because you can bring the lights down and somebody has a sob story about their life or whatever. And it's just, it's a mix of songs and stories in the night. It's such a genius concept, because it's one set, it's the cast, and it's a sound system. So they can travel it pretty lightly, and they go from town to town and they blow the place up. People absolutely love the show. It's really a very cool concept, and I'm quite jealous that they came up with the idea before I did. You guys want to jump into the musicals?
Yeah, let's do it.
So what we're discussing today, and it's because it's an idea that is not going away, and that we came up with this idea about talking about when they make musicals from movies, is it a good idea? And to give you an example, they made Hairspray from a movie into a musical, and clearly that was a good idea. But then they've gone on and they've workshopped. There's a ton of movies that have come to workshop and have not actually even made it to Broadway, because they were abandoned before they finished the workshop, because they realized it was not going to make any money. Now, why we ask, is it a good idea? Because there have been movies that have been made to musicals that were successful. There are musical movies that have been made into musicals. And then there are movies that have been made to musicals that have been made to movie musicals that have been made to movies again. And just, there's just...
My head hurts, Jeremy.
Rotation. I know. Hey, tell me about it. Like, for example, Mamma Mia. Now, is it a good idea? Do you guys enjoy when they take a blockbuster movie like SpongeBob or a TV and movie concept like SpongeBob, and then they put it on the stage? Can anybody think of a musical that they have seen that came that was from a movie that right off your head?
I mean, I just saw Back to the Future.
Exactly.
And yeah.
And give us the report.
It is like hugely about how you do it, not whether to do it, but like how. But then also, I will say on the whether you do it part, it does like get tiresome for me at some. I think it's a movie adaptation of the musical of Matilda, right? Everyone's like, oh my God, it's so amazing. You have to watch it. And I just haven't, because I'm like, I've reached my limit of Matilda in my life, right? Like, I can't do it again.
I will say I did see it, and it is incredible. I thought it was great.
Yeah. No, and it's honestly, it probably is amazing, and I'll maybe get to it eventually, but it's like, I think that's the problem for the greater idea of this, is like the fatigue can happen. Like, that's a real thing, and it can happen with different intellectual properties or franchises or whatever, right? And I think so, it's like timing maybe is a big matter there as well. Like, in so much that like I say, back to the future, Back to the Future has been a thing for a long time, and it's just now being turned into a musical. And so maybe someone somewhere thought, this is the time for this to happen. People aren't...
Maybe it took that long to get produced.
I mean,
people
really
aren't tired of Back to
the Future. Right away.
People have stopped being tired of Back to the Future, or maybe they never were, right? But, and then on like the topic of like how you do it matters. Like, I didn't see SpongeBob, but from everyone who I know did, it was very like much in the style of SpongeBob, like the cartoon, like very.
I saw sort of, it was magical. It was very cool.
It's cool visuals, very tongue in cheek. Stayed true to the characters for the most part. And also like that has that self-awareness to it of like, it's sort of winking at the audience, in a break the fourth wall kind of way.
Right.
And, sure. But that's the way SpongeBob, you know, I watched the cartoons that SpongeBob's always been like that.
Yeah.
So it felt very faithful to the material. And so that's kind of my biggest gripe with Back to the Future is that Back to the Future is kind of doing all that same stuff too as a musical, but never did any of that as a movie. Like, I don't think there was...
Oh, interesting.
I don't think there was a time I can remember in the movie, really, where, like, any of the characters sort of, like, was winking at the audience.
Right, like, had that aside to the audience of, like, you're in on this. Yeah,
there wasn't, like a Zach Morris from Saved by the Bell moment of, like, time out, and, like, he talks to the audience. Like, it was... It's internal logic, like... stayed put, right?
Mm.
And they just like don't do that at all with the musical. It's very campy, and there's multiple moments where it's like, yes, audience, we know we're in a
musical. Wait, what can you say? What were the successes of the show? Where did they win?
The DeLorean. It is all of the time travel moments of the show. Those are worth it for their own sake. I mean, but I think the first time I saw it, I was like, this is worth being here for. It kind of feels like you're on a ride a little bit, like you're at Disney World, but it's still great. It's still awesome. And if they can pull it off in the same way I saw it in London here, it'll last for a while.
That's cool.
Oh, cool.
But I think and that's like the top, and like a lot of the performances were really good. And then, like it'll just, musical tastes are what they are. It's like, it's weird because some of the original songs are very, like their own kind of thing, and then all of a sudden it goes da na 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 na, and you're like, oh yeah, it's Back to the Future.
They did one like this where the car was the star, almost, God, 18 years ago now or something like that. It was a Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, and the show was okay. There was a lot of great things to it. But it was okay. There were things that they could have spent more time on and made better. Like, I think the choreography was good, but there was no storytelling in the choreography. Mm. But the car came out and you freaked out because the car basically flew over the audience and came back with this giant articulated arm. And it was so cool and so magical.
Jeez, no spoilers, Jeremy.
Darn it. Jeez. So that was a neat thing. And at the end, the animatronic car got a bow at the end. So basically we all bowed to the toy. And the show was fine. I didn't think it needed to be made into a musical. Do you guys know why they keep making movies into musicals? Have you done a dive on this? It's money.
Yeah,
so it's like... these studios, the movie studios, they have these budgets that are hundreds of millions of dollars at times. And they look at these Broadway shows that are getting returns of, let's say for Lion King and Phantom, Phantom got a return of $6 billion off of $18 million investment. And the same for Lion King. So they look at this as if, well, 18 million bucks, that's basically what we spent on posters for opening weekend in Los Angeles. So let's go ahead and invest into a musical. And if it fails, whatever, we'll do another one. And they can invest into 20 or 30 of them. And if one of them hits, they've got a return investment of billions of dollars in there, and let's go. And that's kind of why Disney got into the game to begin with. Mm-hmm. So it's not even for entertainment. It's not because they want us to be moved and changed by these great stories through this wonderful musical medium. It's because the the dollar, the investment to return can be so big that they want to do this. And too bad, I would say.
Upsetting.
Yeah.
I would say, like, Allison, she just went to go see, Allison's my wife. Allison just went to go see, Once Upon One More Time, like one of their, I think it's like their third or fourth preview or something.
The Britney Spears musical.
I mean, if you can call it that, it's a musical with Britney Spears music in it. But you can tell, you can just tell it's like some committee of producers who are like, people like this, people like this, people like this, people like this. Let's put all those things into one thing and then all those people will come to it, right? And what you get is this horrible sort of Frankenstein's monster of marketable things that nobody asked for, right? Like,
I'm just picturing Britney Spears with like bolts coming out of her neck right now.
Yeah, it's it's like people like Britney Spears music. People like, you know, there's this guy. Okay, do you guys remember? This freaked me out when I looked at the playbill. Do you guys remember Justin Guarini?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was the first runner up of American Idol.
Yeah, along with Kelly Clarkson.
He's
right?
The Prince Charming guy. Yeah. He's in it as Prince Charming. And so it's like, okay, he's got some audience, some appeal. Let's make it about some fairy tale stories that are beloved. Let's involve some fairy tales and let's put in some trendy social commentary. This has got to win, guys. People will love this. And then you watch it and you're like, oh no, it's
well, it's
like,
yeah, it's people that don't practice or are not involved in this medium trying to get into it and being in charge of it just because they have money. For example, and you guys, I don't know what your opinion of it is, but when they make these musicals, especially the musicals that are sing-driven into movies, and then they cast actors who don't sing, it makes me want to pull my hair out. For example, Les Miserables. There were some beautiful performances in show. And then there were some things in that movie that made me angry. Because we dedicate our lives to musicals, and we dedicate our lives to this craft, and then they just decide, well, he's famous, so we'll just teach him a lifetime's worth of work, and it'll be fine. What do you guys think of that movie? Did you see it?
Yeah, I saw it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I saw it. Okay. I started watching it on a flight, on a transatlantic flight, and I fell asleep. So I didn't finish it, but I watched enough. Let's just say that. And you know what? Actually, I think is another good example of this, bringing it back to ourselves somewhat, is Phantom of the Opera. Like the
choices were made.
What's his face? The movie for that, you know? I was like, oy. And I think, I mean, yeah, there's some. It's one of the, to me, like, performance quality, like how good someone singing something is, like it's one of those things where sometimes, like, even to an audience person, like they don't know why they don't like it, but their brain does, you know? Like, it's the difference of like someone's leaving the theater and they're just kind of like, they feel like about something where they could have felt really amazing about it had the singing been better, but they don't. It's like it's a thing. It exists in this like negative space where you don't know what you're missing out on unless you've like heard various people performing something. Right?
I know exactly what you're talking about.
You don't know how good something can be. You know,
there's a moment like that in the movie. It's just funny. The movie of The Music Man. There's a moment like that where The Music Man's talking to, is it Etta Peru? What's the mom's name? Oh, shoot. I can't remember the character.
Winthrop's mom? Or
Winthrop's grandma, basically.
Grandma.
So the Music Man's talking to her, and he's giving her his 1-2, and she's just smiling, and then he walks away and leaves, and she does a take, not to the camera, but she just kind of looks at him in the distance and goes, and you know that she's just been sucked in and then realizes, no. I don't feel good about it, and I don't know why. It's one of the most fantastic moments in I think musical movies ever, because it just says everything. So funny. So I'm taking it you were not a fan of the Phantom movie.
No, I mean, or of the lame. I mean, Russell Crowe totally ruined that Les Mis movie for me, at least. and it's like, and again, you wouldn't know that unless you'd heard Philip Quast.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
Right, exactly. Exactly.
You know, moment in my young life.
You don't know what you're missing out on.
And again, I think that's, you know, some of the things with, you know, the Phantom of the Opera movie too. So many people, you know, younger people who didn't know what our show was and still have never seen our show, saw that movie. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like what you guys are saying, unless you have something else to compare it to.
And that's their comparison.
You go, oh, yeah. Well, that was cool. That guy sounds, I didn't know that famous actor could sing like that. And you go, that's amazing. And, you know, the good thing from that movie is we gained a ton more, you know, Phantom fans and people that were, mm-hmm. Inspired to come see our show. And then when they see our show, they're even more blown away because they're like, wow.
Right.
You know, you guys. You
it,
know,
it was during a time when the show was not doing that great at the box office, I believe. And then the
right.
movie created a complete regeneration of audience members, which, so success, oh. I guess. Is that a success to have a movie that's kind of, and then...
Well, you know what I'm waiting for now is like the day when they make a Hamilton movie.
Well, they did though. That's the thing, and it was really good. They mean
well, but they did a pro shot of the stage
Correct.
Version. I'm talking about like if they like Les Mis movie Hamilton.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, like, well, like you know they did I mean? For
full cinematic. Yeah, yeah.
Like they did for In
like
the Heights.
A full like movie. Yeah. Like I'm fully expecting that to happen. Down the line at some point.
I think that would be so expensive to have, because that's a period piece, and they would have to create an entire New York City from that time frame.
Oh yeah.
Wow.
But I mean we've seen the proof of concept with like Bridgerton.
That's true.
Right? Like that thing, the sort of I don't know what you'd call it, the recontextualization of history mm-hmm. thing is like super I don't know. Not mainstream, but like zeitgeisty.
Zeitgeisty. Yeah. Yeah, and also,
but no, yeah, I think I watched an interview with the what was the actor who played the Phantom in the Phantom movie?
Gerard Butler.
I watched an interview where he was basically saying like they taught him how to sing, like they like heard him sing a bit for the audition for this, and then they're like, okay, we think we can do it. Which is, we think we can teach you how to sing well enough to be in this movie. And then, like, he learned to sing whilst, like, as a part of doing the movie. Not, like, how we, like, just learn to sing first and then hope we can sing, like, perform it as a career later. It's like, he did it backwards.
Yeah, right. It right. makes me yeah. pull my hair out, those things. It's not an easy sing. It's not like all kinds of people can play the Phantom. It's a really specific, hard sing with a 2-octave range and just power. And it takes a lot of training, mm-hmm. especially
yeah.
not only to sing it, but to get through it over and over. It takes, I think, a really special singer. I don't know. It makes me nuts. That is the point I'm trying to make.
I would agree with that.
That's when I think you could have made different choices. Though I'm a huge fan of his because the movies he makes are my favorite things. They're
so cool.
He's such a great actor.
I do think one of the well for me anyway successful. You're talking about somebody learning to sing for one of these. Movie musicals was Andrew Garfield when they did that. What was it? Tick, Tick, Boom.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like he was that whole. I thought that awesome. Was incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible. Yeah. Movie, and he was mm-hmm. fantastic. And that was one of those too. He had not done much singing at all.
But it's a very different kind of interview. Singing how he, too, right?
It is. But you know, it's still he was very musical, and I thought he did a great job with that.
Well, with this, what do you guys think of new musicals coming out on new musicals coming out on movies? Like the new Wicked movie, where it's got Ariana Grande. Mm. Now, she's a TV star.
Yeah, like Little Mermaid.
She's a TV star. She's also probably one of the greatest vocalists around. She's insane. I don't know if you guys have seen when she goes on the talk shows and they make her do different
styles. She's a theater girl, too.
And,
so
yeah, it's just... she's not mm-hmm. human. She's so good.
Yeah.
So is that a win or is that a loss? Like a pop star singing these roles, these Broadway roles, but maybe, in my opinion, I think it was a really fantastic choice. But what do you guys think about that?
I think it's one of those things where, again, it's how you do it. You are now open to possibilities with doing a new interpretation or adaptation of something, right? Like, I think of like almost like Game of Thrones, how the TV series was coming out, like, but the books series wasn't done, right? And so at some point, like the series got past the books, and then also like as they were doing the series, they changed the like. George R. R. Martin like essentially was treating the series as his way of like doing like edits to his books. You know, it's like authors talk about this, like once you finish a book and it's published, like you can't change it. Like you can't go and everything you'd want to change, say after it's as soon as it comes releases, you want to change stuff essentially, right? But you can't because the book's out. And so he kind of took that is like the series is like a way to make those changes, right? And I think like some of them worked up until they stopped working. and again, once the series got past the books, it was a whole new kind of like writing challenge or whatever,
right.
So in that same vein, it's like a movie of Wicked could be a way to, let's say, more faithfully adapt the novel it's based off of, or you know, or change things. Like I think it's already happening with Little Mermaid. Granted, it was a movie and then a musical and now it's a movie, but like right. How the arrangements of the songs, like there's all sorts of like, vocal ornamentation being added to it, you know, like that it's opportunities for that kind of stuff. Right. And some of that I think is really cool. And I think that I don't know if they're going to do that with Wicked, where like they're going to just say, hey, like Ariana, like riff as hard as you want on Popular right now, you know, like
I have a feeling there'll be some of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Like there might be a little bit of that. There might be times when they like rein that in to be like, this is such a beloved, you know, it's like, I think at the end of Defying Gravity, right? Like I feel like every Elphaba does a different whoa kind of thing. And so it'll be like, well, what do they do for the movie? And then that one will be, but the thing with that is like, whatever they do for the movie, it's going to be like that every time you watch that movie then, right? Like
that's going to be the quintessential sort of version of it, right? But you know, have you ever, as a sidestep, yeah. I'll sidestep here. Have you guys noticed that ending to Defying Gravity kind of fits on everything? Have you ever done that? That game where you sing a song like "Jingle All the Way," or "Help
Dude,
Me Make
you have
the
no
Music
idea.
Of the
Night." Yeah, I always wanted. I used to always sing that off stage at the end of the show before a curtain call. I always wanted the fan to do that.
It's just a great thing to pick up a song.
It figures so prominently in my daily life, you have no idea.
It's like the new...
Whoa, all the time.
It's like the new version of By Menon.
By Menon. Do you know that was written by... Barry Manilow.
Was it really?
Yeah. Mm, he used to be a jingle writer.
That's amazing.
He has some of these crazy jingles that you don't realize are also Barry Manilow.
His show's coming to Broadway.
Yeah.
I'm going to take this opportunity to call you both out for being dads.
Why?
That was a dated reference, the By Menon thing. And you dads over here with your dad humor podcast. I have to say, this is one of the things I listened to your first episode and I have to commend you. I texted Jeremy. I was like, the dad humor is so great. You have to keep that going. Your guys is crappy dad jokes.
The dad humor is strong in this one.
Wait, for crappy?
It. How dare you?
Well, you know, it's just for me, I listen to them and I groan, but that's what's
well, that's what's
about
satisfying
them.
About a dad joke, my friend, is that the groan is just as satisfying as a laugh. Like,
Oh my god, you guys need to see Shucked, by the way. So much dad humor.
Oh, I'm in. Oh, nice. I'm in. Yeah.
You guys would just love it.
Abby, Greg, I've got a new dad joke for you, by the way.
Yo.
So my roommate.
Oh, do you?
My roommate is scared of our apartment, and he says, you know what? I don't like this place. I think it's haunted. And I told him, that's crazy. I've been living here for 250 years. I haven't seen a thing. You're welcome. All right, back to topic, guys.
Yes.
Oh, Jeremy, I had one for you. And, I was feeling kind of down this morning, and my wife Bridget came over, and she just put her hand on my shoulder and she said, Earth. And, that really meant the world to me.
Jesus.
Oh, you're not right. You're not right. You're not right.
You are horrible.
God.
Greg, I was standing in front of the mirror.
I love it.
I was standing in front of the mirror naked. And I realized, as I stared at myself, I realized that I'm probably going to get kicked out of this IKEA.
God.
Oh, man. See, we could turn this into a musical.
You're welcome. Yes. Yeah. Dad jokes. A musical.
I mean, like I say, it's called Shucked.
Yes.
Go see it.
Well, good. Oh, all right. For all you dad jokes.
Let me use Shucked to get us back on topic guys. Because when I think about, the idea of, taking a movie and turning it into a musical, you kind of have to put that up against, taking any idea and turning it into a musical. Like, Shucked is a musical about corn that is super corny with corny dad jokes in it. And, a musical that's some kind of halfway house between traditional musical theater and country music, I would say.
Sure.
And so it's in the same way that we're who would think of turning Back to the Future into a musical.
Right.
Who would think of turning Korn into a musical?
Well, it's an original story, and that's kind of one of the things that we're missing in musicals these days is somebody coming out with an original story. And I realized the irony of me saying this as I was in a musical that came from a book, but it really, originality is kind of starting to get lost because there's 5,000 producers making these shows and they're so expensive to put on that they really don't like risk at all. And that is kind of getting in the way of originality, and it's getting in the way of making musical art. And even Shucked is. Shucked is a tongue-in-cheek kind of thing, but there's a story there and there's a lesson and there's a reason you come in and you leave changed, and it does all of the points. It hits all the boxes in an original way, and I think that's getting lost, and it's sad that we're not taking risks on original ideas, in which there is ideas that maybe we should do like other countries and have a federal program where there are a few shows that is federally funded. And then they can take all the risks they want. They do it at the Metropolitan Opera all the time. They absolutely will put something on that stage that is hugely terrible. And they'll spend tons of money.
Oh, yeah.
But they take those risks, and it's really great.
I just went to see... Well, I didn't see, in reference to your point, any of the newer... I didn't see any of the new operas this year, but I did see the new production of Don Giovanni.
Yeah.
Last week, and the Met's been doing this thing where they get these film directors to come in and direct stage action for an opera or whatever, and it always to me falls a little short because these film directors, they're very they're trying to make a pretty picture, but they forget to stage action and have that all make sense. And so I feel like this was a casualty of that in a way where you got some pretty pictures sometimes, but a lot of boring stage action because there just wasn't they weren't, it wasn't fully utilizing everything that stage is capable of in a lot of ways. And it was like, it was too minimal. I'm a huge critic of minimalism at the Metropolitan Opera because it's a giant stage. Yeah. They have millions of dollars of operating budget. It's like nearly 4,000 seats in that auditorium. Like, it's a big place. It is no place for minimalism. And it's like, let minimalism happen in the like little theaters in Europe or even here, like, you know, Philadelphia Opera does a lot of interesting sort of contemporary new things.
Joyce's.
And you know what I was going to say, yeah, though? Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
To your point about like original stories, like that, I would say like the push to like make an argument against that, the idea of like adapting stories for the stage is centuries old.
Of course.
Like Mozart's operas, a lot of the Baroque operas from like the early 1700s and the late 1600s, those are all based off of like Greek tragedies or biblical stories. And so they weren't like the concept of making that, of performing them on the stage, was something that happened after the like idea for this, like well after the idea for the story, right? Sure. And we still are kind of doing that. I think of Hadestown, the story of Orpheus in the underworld is a Greek myth. It's like thousands of years old at this point.
Right.
And we're still telling it in new and different ways. There's two or three different operas I can think of that are based off of that. But Hadestown's like one of my favorite musicals like ever. And it's what I recommend to people when they want to like, when they're like, I want to experience some good musical theater. I'm like, go see Hadestown. So I'm not like opposed to adapting a good story for the stage per se. It's just like, how are you doing it? And, you know, like, and again, back to the, like the fatigue of it, like, are we all sick of this yet or not, yeah, or have we gotten over that? And are we ready for a new version?
At the end of
something?
The day, it's about what changes you and what moves you. There's an interesting thing that Joyce has just cut in to say about the federal theaters. Now, we have had a federal theater here in the US and it failed because the content ended up getting regulated. So the government got involved in the wrong way and there was an uprising and it ended up cutting the legs off of the project, which sucks.
When I was talking with my friends when I was in Portugal. Portugal is very like the arts are publicly funded there. Like the point where like if you want to perform anything, if you want to like put on a show, it starts with essentially a grant proposal. Like you have to go to the government first to, you know, for funding or whatever, right? Like independently funded things there, it's like it's rare. It doesn't happen, right? And so, but I was talking with them about like sort of the pitfalls of that is that like there's essentially like a committee of people who get to decide what does and does not happen.
Yeah, that is a problem.
And it made me think, like, what if there was like a small little like government body of like five people who got to decide which shows happened or not on Broadway. Jeez. and like which people were in those shows. Like, imagine how corruptible that is.
Yeah, there would be no Hamilton, that's for that sure. Would be. I think that would be it's not safe concept. I don't know. I don't like it. It'd be like how people are attacking the Little Mermaid right now. It would be disgusting. And
Well, and the other problem with it too is like, I finally, this is where I discovered the idea of like Euro trash. I don't know if you've heard that, but like the idea that like this is a thing in opera where like there's a lot of like new productions of things where like it's La Boheme, but it's on the moon and like just like weird concepts. I would call them weird. That's only possible in a publicly funded situation where a director can come up with this goofy concept that most people will dislike.
Yeah.
Right. But the thing is like it's the next year they're still going to have their same budget. Like they're not going to suffer any consequences from putting on
for lighting
crazy
money on
like
fire.
Yeah. Like, they're not gonna, they're still gonna get a budget the next year for the arts, because, you know, whatever. Like, and so they're not beholden to anyone, essentially. They're not beholden to the market forces that, like, make musicals succeed or not, let's say, here.
Interesting.
So that's an interesting, it's like, there's pluses and minuses to it.
Yeah, sure. I mean,
that being said, there should be more public funding for the arts here in the U.S.
Indeed.
For sure.
Indeed. Especially in areas that it's not, there's not a lot of it. There are some areas that are affected greatly by a lack of arts. I've been to many of these cities where the arts are just struggling, and they're on a volunteer basis, and they bring something in on this shoestring budget, and they really get things that are uninspiring, and the youth as a result is not inspired by arts, and they don't show up, and they don't value it, and it's really a shame that it's not, even if it's something that people don't like. Like, a school will have 20 different sports teams, and these sports teams, not every one of the kids likes all the different sports, but they get the option to either try it, look at it, or even know it exists. Now, that's not the same in arts. There's not a bunch of budget for kids who want to be in musicals, kids who want to be in plays, kids who want to draw, kids who want to express themselves in many different ways. There's just
dance programs
exist in the society and in some of the places. And you go to the major cities, and of course they have it, because that's where they can get funded, and that's where the money will support it. But when you go into places like rural Michigan and rural Ohio, and the town is not really into the arts so much. It's like some of these farm communities that have, and I'm not to say that farmers don't like arts, not at all. It's just that their focus is, some of these communities, their focus is farm production, and they don't have the time or the resources to step aside and go, dude, you know what? We need to bring in some musical acts so that the kids are exposed to these things. It just doesn't come up.
I'm actually going back to, I'm going to Fargo, North Dakota, like, tomorrow to see my family.
Oh, nice.
I've got a new nephew who was born in January.
Aww.
I still haven't
Congrats.
Met. So I got to see the little chonker. But but Fargo is a small, surrounded by agricultural kind of place. But it does have an opera company, if you can believe it.
I can believe it. There are some places that have done these things. And do you feel like it enriches the community?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would say, and like, definitely, like, because kind of what you were making me think of is like the idea of like, there still needs to be theater programs at high schools and choir and all that stuff. Because even if people don't want to like end up doing that stuff themselves, you know, like we have, like make a career out of that stuff, they still should be open to having like the experience of that stuff to potentially fall in love with something.
Yeah.
Like that
exposure.
Like, I think of like when I went to go see Music Man when it was still on Broadway, right? So much of that audience was just people who love the Music Man because they had that experience of seeing it when they were young in some kind of meaningful way, and they know, they, it's like they know all the numbers, they know, like, you never, I'd never been in an audience that like knew all the applause moments of the show so well. It was like they'd rehearsed it or something. Like, no one was like, oh, do we clap now? It's like they knew exactly where to clap. And it's because there was just like this diehard love of the show. And I like think of that idea sometimes in contrast with like how people love pop music. And so it's this idea of like, if people can fall in love with like musicals, you know, that aren't derived from pop music, like Les Mis and Phantom or whatever, right? At the same time that they're falling in love with their favorite bands or like pop singers, then there's a chance for us to for original musicals to still have a place alongside all the jukebox musicals or in the musicals that rely like completely on pop music.
You guys, let's shift gears. Let's talk about what is a failure and what is a success. I want to know your opinions on things. So in musical staged musicals, what did you guys think of Jekyll and Hyde? Is that a boo or a yay?
As a musical or a musical set to
as,
a movie?
As a resource. Or... like, let's say you're... Jekyll and Hyde made a movie. So let me dive deeper into this. Now, Hasselhoff, I believe, funded a movie so that you can watch Jekyll and Hyde on on DVD. That's how long ago it was. And it was funded so that you could go to the store and library and get Jekyll and Hyde and watch it and see it. Did you guys like that version?
I've not seen the entirety of it, but I have seen like that one number of his where it's like his hair is like in his face or not in his face and in his face and not in his face. It's like, I guess that was cool. Like, I feel like when I first saw that, I was like, I don't know, it was like 10 years ago maybe, but I was like, that's cool. If you can like put aside, like, there's an element of it that's like a little ridiculous, but I was for it at least. I don't know. I would say I'm for it.
I loved it
more likely than not.
What about you, Greg?
Yeah, I mean, I like Carl, what you're talking about with the hair moment, I thought it was kind of hysterically dramatic. But yeah, I saw the show, I saw it live, and I saw it with Sebastian Bach, who was metal singer. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yes, dude.
Oh my gosh.
It was insane because it was like one of his first weeks there, and like the people sitting in front of us were like, I guess, other like heavy metal singers and like in a band or something, and they were like freaking out. They were, you know, yeah, like after every number, and they're like, get it, and screaming. I mean, it was like a rock concert, and you know, he's like 7 feet tall, like dangly arms and stuff.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, he was fine. He was, again, hysterically dramatic. You know, he sang some of it. He sang his face off. And then I was like, I'm going to wait around at the stage door to see this guy. And it was like an hour later, he finally came out, and it was just a whole bunch of like, you know, rock and roll junkies hanging out there. He finally comes out and he's like holding a beer. And he's like, what's up, freaks? It was so much fun. I just had so much fun at that show. And
oh, that's good.
You know, dig the music.
Are you guys going to have Laird on this podcast at all? Laird McIntosh?
Yeah, Laird was here.
Oh, you already did? Actually, did he tell you his story about the one time he got booed as the Phantom in Toronto?
Is that because he was...
I don't know if it's...
Is it because the Phantom was the guy from Kiss?
I don't know if it's my... It's maybe not my story to tell, but I'll tell it to you anyways. Laird, I love you. Laird, okay. And I don't know, maybe you can have Laird back on and he can save it for Broadway Con. All right. Okay, well, all right,
well,
I'll leave
fine.
You all.
We can talk about
I'll
that
give you
Broadway
a tease.
Con.
The lead in is that he got booed. And booed is the Phantom. And I think it was also like one of the first times he was going on as the Phantom, if not the first time. So
that has to be
anyway,
that'll leave a mark.
It has to be because the Phantom was the guy from Kiss. It has to be, and I want to know this story. Oh my god!
I will.
Well,
yes.
Then let's move on. What did you guys think of the movie Rent? Was that a success?
Again, another musical I'm not like hugely familiar with. I'm familiar with it just because it's like a version of La Boheme, which is an opera.
Right. Well, I'm talking about talking about the movie. Like, they made the stage version into a movie, and they used a lot of the original cast in it, which was nice.
Yeah.
But did you like the concept? Was it a win or a needs improvement?
I don't seem to like have great memories of it, and not that that's good or bad. I just, I don't know if it left a mark on me as much as seeing the show live did. So I, you know, I can't even recall having great feelings one way or the other about the movie of that.
Oh, okay. All right. Well,
I think that points to something though, Greg, of just like the impact of live theater can't be underestimated. Like I, my friend Devin played me the soundtrack for Hamilton before I saw it on stage. Mm-hmm. And I remember not liking it. I remember he played it for me. I was listening to it and I was like, this sounds like a middle school history teacher's lame attempt to like make history fun. You know, I'm like, why does anyone like this? He's like rapping about the founding of our nation. But, and then I saw it live and I was like, oh, I get it. Now that there's like characters and stakes that are more like obvious and apparent to me and like the stories being told.
Right.
And I think that like you feel that in a more impactful way when you see it live. Though I think the case of the Rent movie using so much of the original cast is actually something worth like highlighting in like as like an idea of like, then they must have had there was some competent singing going on. Like they were like singing actors in the first place,
right,
not actors who learn to sing later. And so I think you can kind of maybe point to the success of that movie.
Yeah, I thought it was great that they had most of the same cast. I see Joyce was saying that, yeah, you liked Rosario Dawson as Mimi. Yeah, she's great.
She was good. She did a great job. I agree.
Yeah.
Well, let's have some yay or nays on movies that were turned to musicals. Okay. Just quickly, let's rip through and let's see what you guys think. Movies turned to musicals. Yay or nay on Grease?
Nay.
Yay.
Oh, nay for you?
And Joyce is a yay, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I say yay on that one.
How about Some Like It Hot?
All right, I'll be in the minority. Yay.
Yay for Joyce.
I haven't seen it.
Yay
but
for
yeah,
me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sunset Boulevard, a Andrew Lloyd Webber musical turned from movie.
Incredible set.
Yay.
I'm a yay. I like it a lot.
I would say yay.
Yeah,
for sure.
It was a good name. Especially the set.
Yeah.
The set alone was worth seeing. Little Shop of Horrors. Oh, Alan Menken's
big,
first
big
project.
Yay for me.
Big yay.
Definite
yeah.
yay.
Yeah.
And Joyce is a yay. That's a
huge
that's kind
yay.
Of a big, that's an iconic movie in our musical theater land, I think. How about Singing in the Rain?
Yay.
Big
yay.
Time yay.
Yeah,
but it
definitely.
Was designed to be. It's kind of, yeah.
It, and it's incredible, you know,
well,
that, you know,
and
it, they made it rain
Guys
on stage.
And Dolls,
yeah,
incredible.
Cool.
Was Guys and Dolls a movie first?
Yes. No, it wasn't.
No? Or was
oh,
it
no,
a
no,
stage
no,
show
no,
first?
No, it wasn't.
It was a movie
it
later.
It's a movie later.
I yeah. just saw, that was the other thing. That was the other thing I couldn't remember. I saw Guys and Dolls when I was in London too.
Oh yeah, that's right. You mentioned that.
At the Bridge Theater. It is so cool. It is this amazing, like immersive thing they're doing there where the playing space for the actors, they have like 200 people from the audience that are all on that same level. And then parts of the floor come up. They raise up higher to like a stage level, and the rest of it's in the round. Like there's seats in the round in the gallery seats.
Wow.
And so the stage changes as the scenes do. And they also use the audience as like essentially part of the show. Like they're the crowd in various scenes, like when you're on the streets of New York or whatever. Right. And it's like, it's funny because there's like people, there's like stage, there's actors as well as like crew that are dressed in costume as like police officers or something, and they will move the audience away from the parts of the stage that are about to
that's so cool
lift up and become the stage, and so it's, and like so they're all part of the show and in costume too. And so I didn't have an immersive ticket. I wasn't on the floor. I was like in one of the seats.
Okay.
But the only problem with it is that the audience who are in the immersive part of it, like they're standing for the whole thing.
That is
like,
a problem.
Oh, wow.
It's like standing
yeah.
room.
Yeah.
And and can, like, for people with certain temperaments, it can be a little like overwhelming, I would say too. But it was truly a great show, and like, if they could do a version of that here, it'd be awesome. But
let's move on to other shows. What did you guys think, yay or nay, with Moulin Rouge? I know it's a hard one. Because the movie,
that's
the
a hard
movie
one.
Was so perfect. I think that I'm a yay because the concept is glorious and it should be on stage because it's a beautiful concept. Really?
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say yay. Right. I've seen it like 3 or 4 times now on Broadway.
So there you go.
And once on the tour.
What about Mean Girls?
Yeah.
I think the movie's nay. Hysterical. I didn't get to see the musical, so I can't compare it.
I think it's a yay. It has such a following. It's just, they have a crazy fan base with that thing. And so it was obviously meant to be fantastically stage-driven, which, cool.
And it's going to be go back to a movie again.
Yeah, that's right. And there you go. And
yeah, it's so wild.
Now, here's someone's... here's someone's... speak English. Here are some movies, very specifically, then turned to musicals, like Tootsie. Was that a yay or nay?
Did you? I didn't hear what you just said, Jeremy. Can you say it again?
Oh, sorry. The movie Tootsie. Is that a yay or a nay?
Ooh.
Well, I'll start. It was a yay on my side because my kids saw it and they absolutely loved it. They thought it was hysterical and they left. They were singing it. They were talking about the scenes and they just absolutely loved it. But they were not from the generation that saw Tootsie with Dustin Hoffman. So that's that's an interesting juxtaposition there. So I guess it's...
I saw their performance at the Tonys.
Yeah.
Like, I went to the Tonys that year, and that the main dude won the Tony for it, and I saw the performance. And I was like, I get what the, like, why this, the appeal of this, right? It's like, it wasn't like a, I think it kind of depends on, like, how beloved that intellectual property is to you, really. Because that's kind of my fear with going back to the Future. My fear with that is that it's a bit more beloved as a franchise here in the States than it is in the UK. And that, like, while people in the UK love the campiness of the production there, people here in America are going to be, like, kind of upset that it's messing with Back to the Future. Like, they're going to be like, oh, this ruins... They ruined Back to the Future with this or something. Like, I feel like there's more of an attitude like that here.
Right.
With stuff that is, you know, beloved or like things we like claim to have be part of our greater culture or something, you know.
So let's talk about two.
Yeah,
more
I can
things.
See that definitely.
Let's talk about two more things before we wrap up here. Now I'm gonna go over some new concept ideas for musicals that are in the works. It'll talk about your opinions, and then lastly, start thinking about it now. At the end, we're all gonna reveal a movie that we would like to see turned into a musical. Okay. So just keep that on the back burners in your minds right now. So I'm going to talk about some things that are in the works and what do you think about that? So one, is Betty Boop, the musical. Yeah. And it has a different concept. So I believe their concept is that she is in the actual world that we are in and then how people are reacting to it. It's a very different idea. And what do you guys think about that? When I say Betty Boop, the musical to you, what is your first reaction?
Boop, boop, be doop.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be pretty cool. I should know more about it because Bridget was actually kind of wrangled the kid when they did like a reading of it, but we never really delved into exactly what it, you know, what all it was. So you know, I definitely would see it. I think it could be something really cool.
All right. What about you, Carl?
I think it's like, I feel like that's not a bad idea, because there's probably a lot, it's an old enough thing that there's probably a lot of people, a lot of theater goers now that have like no idea, like don't know anything about Betty Boop, where if you are like reinterpreting Betty Boop to some new thing, like that's fine, because it'll just be, it'll essentially be original or like brand new to a lot of the people who go see it anyways. And so it's like, is it a, it'll be one of those things, like if it can become its own thing. Like I kind of felt that way weirdly about like Beetlejuice, where there was a lot of people who like maybe never saw the movie and didn't care so much about, you know, the awesome movie that it was with Michael Keaton.
Right.
But the people who saw the musical, they fell in love with what the musical was. Right.
Right.
Exactly. Sure. Yeah.
I would say, I would call
it. It's also
like
a great story.
It got like this cult really. Following of like, it's a spin.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like just like the weird little like things that Beetlejuice does, like people really glomped onto that, I feel like, and so they could do a similar thing with Betty Boop.
Yeah, I agree.
If they wanted to.
Well, what do you right. think about 13 Going on 30? Did you ever see that little movie?
I don't think I did.
Joyce says
I assume
that's
it's about a 13-year-old kid.
Jennifer. Isn't that Jennifer
yeah,
Garner?
It was a great movie. It was really it's fun. Greg Mills, I think that you've got somebody who's very upset out there on your.
Yeah, they your they really want to somebody to move their car and park there. I think
so they're just letting everyone
you know.
Know
I keep
about
going
it.
Back and forth.
Oh, yeah,
nonstop
muting my mic, but I know.
No, that's so funny. I assumed it was me. Like that's New York for you. You just assume the horns.
The horns are a language.
You just get used to them.
The extent of the
yeah.
the extent of the fuck you is how long you hold the horn down, right?
I'm trying to decide if the honkiness in favor of 13 going on 30 or if they're against it. I can't tell.
They're definitely whatever it is. They're definitely passionate about it.
So wait, we're going to have, there's two movies that are being worked on as musicals. One's 13 going on 30 and one's what, the, kind of the opposite, 17
again.
I'm guessing they're both these kind of age
yeah.
movie things.
My
I'm
gosh.
Thinking
wow.
Also, that could, I mean, the concept's good because obviously you putting somebody who's older into a young version, it can be fun, but I think it just makes a great 90s movie or a 2000s movie is really just what it comes down to. What about
yeah.
the
well as someone who has done yeah I was gonna say I was in the tour of national tour of Big the musical, so it's very much
ooh.
You know I played the grown-up version of the big version of Josh, so I'd be interested to see mm-hmm. these
well Joyce
these
loved
other,
Big so that's a win. What do you guys think about the Bodyguard, the Whitney Houston becoming a musical?
I mean, God, I don't know. I mean,
I think honestly,
because like, is it Whitney Houston music?
Yeah, well, I imagine
it's got to be right. It, like, it's
here's the deal: nobody can do Whitney Houston. It's she's like the top of
I know.
The mountain, and then she's up above that. So it trying to find somebody who can support that kind of singing that is going to be expected is a suicide mission. That's what I think. But I will happily
yeah.
be pleasantly surprised.
Well, but see, here's the thing. I kind of, you could have said that same thing about MJ the musical.
True,
and then
true,
they
true.
Found a guy who could do it all. And I saw MJ like 5 or 6
pleasantly
times.
Surprised.
Because Miles Frost as Michael Jackson was just unbelievable, like unreal, amazing. And so it's like it could be a vehicle for someone who can be an like amazingly like Whitney Houston, but
8 times a week,
that's high bar. Like, it's
bar.
Very and yeah 8 times a week, like that's tough.
Yeah,
that's
what do you guys think about,
and you have to do the show.
What do you think about how about Coco, the movie, the Disney musical, Coco.
I'm excited for that one. That I think that could be beautiful. I mean, depending on what they can do with it.
Yeah. I think 90% of the time,
if they can pull that off,
90% of the time, a Disney musical movie is a no-brainer. It's a fantastic idea. There's mm-hmm. there's very few of them where you kind of go, I don't know. But and then with that said, I think that Lion King was one of those I don't know kind of moments, and home run. So there you go.
Yeah, it'll come down to, again, like, how are they doing it? Because I think of that movie and I'm like, all of the technical problems to solve for a stage thing with that, because it's like you're in a fantastical place where fantastical things are all happening, and you have to put that on stage in a very like real way. Like how are you going to be able to pull all that stuff
right
off?
Did you make all these physical sets, or is this going to be a lot of projectors or screens? Sure. You know,
but it's yeah. Disney, guys, so their pockets are deep and their resources are amazing. Yeah. So they have a whole sect to their company that is designed to create beautiful things. Joyce says it's going to be another Little Mermaid. How are you going to make the audience believe that you're underwater? I guess so. But I think they did a good job of the Little Mermaid with the underwater concept. I didn't love the musical totally much, but it was they were creative. Okay, here we go. How about this is a fun one? How about Thelma and Louise? This is like putting Titanic on stage, right? Because you know the ending.
Can they just use the DeLorean from Back to the Future and just drive that into the orchestra pit? I mean, what are you going to do?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, like, how do you do the ending?
And at the end, do they have to put, like, a disclaimer? Like, anybody who's thinking or is contemplating suicide, please call this number. But, you know, just like, are there...
Yeah, really. I mean,
right.
Holy cow.
Well, yeah, it's like, how are they going to do that ending?
Great story, though.
Unless they do some kind of version of, like, the Javert suicide in Les Mis, where they just, it's just the car just breaks away.
Yeah, exactly.
And they go,
yeah, well, like you said, Jeremy, they could do the Titanic thing where they show way back on the back of the wall. There's like a little version of the car that's being pulled by a string, and it just kind of
and it goes
off of.
Oh, God, I hope. Oh, please, none of the producers listen to this. And lastly, what do you think about Smash, the TV show, becoming a musical?
That feels
it
like
seems
a
like an no-brainer. Yeah.
It seems like it was set up to be that.
Joyce is there for it. She'd also like to see.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for. That'd be the way I would die, probably, trying to walk around in Heelys. Jeremy, when's your speaking of Disney, you know, can't go wrong, I still want to see Hunchback come in one day.
Oh, that would be neat. You know. Honestly, Hunchback can't be a Broadway show without compromising a lot of the fantastic things about it. It's just too expensive.
Yeah.
They need a lot of people to make it work, and you can't really pay those salaries for that many people. For example, there's a 24-person choir on stage, and yes, you can cut it to 12. You can do all of these things to it and cut it down, but it's really fantastic, and I will tell you that I had a great time doing it. I know that the cast had a great time doing it. The cast was beautiful. And I'm very happy to know that it is out there into communities where the communities are gathering together and pulling every resource they can to put on this fantastic show together. And that to me is more valuable than it being on Broadway and being a big spectacle. I think that it's a community builder, and I'm very happy to know that there are people with that memory. There's high school kids that are a part of the Hunchback of Notre Dame that are going to be 30 years old still talking about doing that thing when they were 18.
Exactly. And I know it wasn't like one of, I guess, what they would call one of their big, you know, biggest successful movies. And maybe it's not, you know, one people talk about, but it's up there as one of my top favorite of all
the music
Disney movies. And I don't know if it's because it's darker. Yeah, the music's so good. I love
it.
Was
there was a lot of really great things pulled from that movie, and the fact is that we were putting it on at the same, because you know it's Disney and they have 3 to 5 concepts happening at the same time, and then they kind of pick one and go with it, and we were up there at the same time as they were developing Frozen, so there was no chance on this planet.
Never heard of it.
But but anyway, it was a really it was a great experience, and that cast was unbelievable. It was really Patrick Page there, Carl, Mr. Hades himself was our Frollo, and he
I've listened to the recording of Hunchback. It's
the
awesome.
Recording that was another I've moment been, like, where singing. Everybody, they pulled all the resources and they pulled all those people into that studio over the Avatar studios at the time, and they did it. They were like, if we're going to do this, we're going to do it right. And they nailed it. It was, wow, that recording. If you haven't heard the recording of The Hunchback of Notre Dame, the musical, that is something to be heard. It was, it is a sound wall of
I've been singing out there on these cabarets I've been doing.
And, I love that song.
So I went and listened to the recording of that, and it's like, I don't know, it's all so good. It became like a rabbit hole that I just was like listening to the rest. I was like, let me keep listening. Yeah. And so
a lot of success.
No, and I know, you know, coming up for this next season or whenever they have auditions for it, that I'll see, you know, all three of us will be at the dance call, I'm sure, for Magic Mike.
Oh, of course. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Talk about winning adaptations of movies into musicals.
Or talk about just ideas that can go so terribly wrong.
Or it could be terribly good, though, too. I mean, I think they did a Magic Mike in Vegas, I think, which was, I assume, a hit out there.
They have it in London.
Yeah.
Well, they have something.
It's still there.
In London,
I wonder if it'd be.
Had it.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I don't know. All right, guys. The moment of truth. What movie or adaptation should become a freaking musical? I'll give you a moment.
First. I have so many, because, I mean, honestly, years ago, I used to work at Chelsea Studios, which is an audition rehearsal space, and we had a studio, we had a board up on the wall, and we would write, you know, what was in each studio, and back, this was before all the digital signs and this and that, and we'd handwrite it in Sharpies and all this stuff, and we always had a studio that didn't exist. But we had, you know, it was a space for it. For whatever reason, it was a storage closet. So we would just leave it blank. And then we started coming up with crazy ideas for shows that were having auditions. And we actually, at one point, someone, I don't remember who it was that worked there, put up Star Wars, the musical. And so many people were like freaking out about it. They're like, wait, they're calling agents and this and that. How do I get in for Star Wars? That it made like the paper that, you know, our studio had put up for Star Wars the musical. So they did like this article about it. So then we started like writing, just, you know, I did like What's Eating Gilbert Grape the musical, you know, and I did Clockwork Orange the musical. Whoa. Which I think would be amazing. So we had like a whole list of musicals that were just beyond.
The Star Wars musical, right? The Star Wars, the stormtroopers come out. What ain't we got? We ain't got names.
Yes. And again, and there's another vehicle for Patrick Page as Darth Vader.
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
You know,
anything that's villain with a low voice. Forget it.
I mean, pretty much.
I would watch that guy read the phone book, honestly.
Yeah, I know. It's amazing.
What about you, Carl?
My mind went straight to comedies, and because one of my like all-time favorite movies ever is Wedding Crashers.
Oh, my God.
But I actually feel like what would be a better musical is Step Brothers.
Step Brothers would be... We have so much space for activities.
Because, yeah, because, like, there's just so much room for, honestly, like, great humor. But then also, like, it ends in kind of a musical way. Like, the big triumphant, like, climax of the movie is their performance at the Catalina Wine Mixer.
That's true.
And so you could really just make that explosively awesome in a stage.
Alex Brightman, like, and musical. Norbert Leo Butts.
Actually, yes. Honestly, if you cast those two in a show, I would just go see it. You wouldn't even give me the title, and that would be, I'd go.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Now get, Rob McClure.
Yeah.
And Christian Bale.
Oh, man. Oh, again, yeah. I would so go to that as well.
Yeah. But yeah, that's, and then of course my mind just goes into all those other, like, Will Ferrell comedies. Like, some of them it would be very impractical to do, like Old School, you know, like the one where, like, the old guys join the fraternity or whatever. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
A lot of that would be very difficult to do.
But you could do, like, 40-year-old Virgin. Fun, you could do Dumb and Dumber.
Oh, we're, yeah. 40-year-old Virgin would be hilarious.
40-year-old Virgin might be good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, no, I think Step Brothers would be the thing.
I've got two.
What you got, Jeremy?
So here's
all right.
Here's our big reveal. One of them is it kind of a no-brainer, and it's because it's set in a Victorian situation, and it's very soap opera-like. But I think that Bridgerton the musical might be a successful venture. I think it lends itself for a lot of storytelling and a lot of characters to do. But I also think, on the comedy side, Austin Powers' International Man of Mystery, the musical, might be awesome.
Yes!
Yeah, that'd be good. Yeah.
I am so for that idea.
It's problematic because yeah, Mike Myers is unstoppable, and that would be a hard thing to cover. But, because you run into that risk
of
a person just playing Mike Myers playing Austin Powers. You know, it can't. You have to come up with your own concept, but it could be.
But you could say the same thing about Mrs. Doubtfire. True. Like, they still try.
Yeah,
well, even though they were
robbed,
like, how is anyone going to be Robin Williams?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Genie, yeah.
But it's also like that Vacation, that musical that is out of town. You know, they did Out of Town. It hasn't come in or anything. But, you know, how do you do a Chevy Chase, you know, impression in Vacation? Or, yeah.
Okay, so Joyce has the number one winning version, I think. She says that she's a friend that did a whole show about movie musicals, and she would love to see, and you ready for this, which is the greatest concept, Forrest Gump, the musical. How fun would that be? I love these shows.
That'd,
like,
awesome.
What was it? Have you seen Highlander? I think it's called the Outlander. Outlander, where this guy just ends up
Outlander?
Being a part of every major concept in history. He's a part of every major war in this time period of history. He ends up going from Scotland all the way over to the US, and then gets himself caught up in the Revolutionary War. It's so ridiculous. It's kind of like Forrest Gump, where he just accidentally is a part of these major points of history. Right. And I think that they could really have a lot of fun with that, without it being terribly expensive. Interestingly enough, I think that if they had a great cast, that with small sets and fun concepts, they could really do a lot of neat things, like they did with the Book of Mormon. Wasn't necessarily an expensive musical, or they didn't have huge groundbreaking concepts. They did it in standard form with fun sets, and the story drove the whole night. So Forrest Gump is a thumbs up on my end. I love that one, Joyce. Nice job. Carl, I don't hear you, man. I think you're on mute for some reason.
Oh, you're right. I just thought of the set piece number from that musical of Bubba singing about shrimp. Like, them just going so high spectacle, like making an original song of him talking about
it's like Hamilton
and
style
just making it huge.
Yeah, that would be
yeah.
See, we're onto something there, right? Tell the studios.
But the bar, I would say the bar is unreasonably high for the Tom Hanks performance.
Yeah,
like, getting someone to be like do Forrest would be tough.
It would
Joyce,
be tough.
Chime in.
Oh my God!
There's a, box of there's a song called "I Was Running."
Yeah,
I just kept running.
I was running.
Yeah, they could have like a whole like dance numbers, just like a bunch of ping pong tables, and they're all dancing around the ping pong tables. That'd be amazing.
Yeah, it'd be interesting how they do that.
The actual, I don't know,
but like
the
heavy stuff
thing.
Of like Lieutenant Dan.
We could have a lieutenant. Oh,
like,
man.
How do you do that?
See, we're all excited about this. But then they would ruin it. I feel like they would ruin it with, like, there's that line that it's just very simple. And he says, you know, sometimes there are just not enough rocks. And it's so perfect. And then they would turn that into a fucking musical number. Excuse my language. Beep that out, please. And they would turn it into a musical number and completely ruin the moment. You know, just like, sometimes there's just not enough rocks. Click, click. Click, digga dig. Like,
the Lieutenant Dan can.
Oh my God.
Everybody comes out in crutches on one leg.
Oh no.
No, it's a can. It's, everyone comes out. They all look like they're like, it's like Lieutenant Dan clones, and they're all can canning, and their legs fly off when they kick.
Oh, thank you, Carl, for that. All right. Well, you guys, thank you. We got to wrap this up. I would like to thank Carl for joining us today.
Woo!
Carlton Moe from Phantom of the Opera, Mr. Pianji himself. Thanks for coming and chatting about movie musicals and musicals to movies and all the different arrangements of that. Once again, Greg, it's great to see you.
You too, buddy.
Thanks for all your work today.
Carl,
Joyce.
Carl, one last one for you. You could do a Fargo, the musical, and, you know, you... hometown,
yes.
You know, hometown experience there.
Oh, wood chipper,
yeah. Wood chipper would be the great finale where you spray the audience with the chipper.
Yes,
you have to bring a plastic.
Oh, and
bag.
Just like, yeah, it's like, well, it's like confetti shoots out of it,
there you
and
go.
You spray that all over the audience. No, yes, thank you guys
thank
you. So much
and,
for having me.
And audience, thank you for joining us for episode 4. We've got some things in the mix. We've just been approved for Broadway Con, so stay tuned to hear more about that. And until then, this is Greg and Jeremy signing off. Have a great day.
See you guys. Have a good one.